computer. Good morning, everybody, or good afternoon if you're in Anaf's area. And hello, all. This is Kanaz Filin and Anaf. We're back for another episode of When East Meets West. And we got so much to talk about this week. It's been such an eventful week. You there?
Yeah, good morning to you, Sir Kinnas. Afternoon where I'm at. So yeah, if you wanna let our dear listeners and readers know, Sir Kinnas, what's been going on the last few days or so, if they've been just living under a rock.
Hey, well, other than the fact we continue to inch every day closer towards a global war, other than the fact that we now have, America appears to be foolish enough to be bringing a large squadron with an aircraft carrier sailing into the region full of Houthis with drones. I mean, that right there, that just, like, that's the big one for this week. America looks like it may be thinking seriously about going to war on Israel's behalf against Iran. I don't know if the people are doing this understand how unpopular that war is in the United States, which is saying something. I mean, America was always one of the last bastions of unconditional love for Israel, thanks largely to the American evangelical Christian population. But I see America inching toward disaster. I see the world right now doing what happened in 1914, when it's like some crazy shoots an archduke. The next thing you know, everybody marches into a war that nobody wants, nobody has planned for, but everybody has to because of treaties and obligations and history, and you get the Great War. And I just see us moving toward this with the problem that our current administration is, considerably more foolish and uninformed than the people who ran World War I, and our industrial base is considerably weaker than it was in 1917 when we bailed into that one.
Yeah, precisely. And good sir, you are bang on the money. Now, really, this is one of those situations where a guy is, as you were saying, good sir, chest thumping or whatnot. And at this point, you have to ask the question, okay, you're going to fight, but with what army, right? These guys are saying stuff. I think, President Joe Biden, I mean, we all know he doesn't actually run the country. We can call it the collective Biden who runs the country. But he goes on, he does a speech. He's like, okay, our commitment to Israel is ironclad, yada, yada, yada. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, okay, so has his people told him that, look, if you try to do your thing with Israel, right, no one's going to give you access, right? I think Kuwait and like Qatar, all these guys have already said, okay, you cannot use our airspace. Turkey has said you cannot use our airspace. Obviously, Iraq, you can't use the Iraqi airspace because, Hashd al-Shaabi has saturated the place. So that leaves you with what? Saudi Arabia, which is like a tenuous relationship. They're probably going to say no within the next few hours or so. Probably today or tomorrow, they're going to say no as well. And Jordan, right? So, okay, so you're going to prosecute this conflict against Iran, allegedly, and you're going to use the airspace of Jordan and Saudi Arabia. Well, good luck with that. That's the first thing I'm going to say. Second thing I'm going to say is, if Israel gets attacked, right? And I don't think, my personal view is that it's going to be an attack on the Golan Heights. Most likely, it's going to be the military outpost there. I would be very surprised if the Iranians actually strike like Tel Aviv or Haifa or one of these bigger places, because they have Hezbollah to do that, right? So, but let's say for argument's sake, my hunch is correct and the Golan Heights get struck, right? So what's going on in the Golan Heights? So you've got the Syrians shelling the place. You've got the Russians beginning to intervene there as well. And as you were saying, good sir, this has all the hallmarks of a wider conflict, not just a wider regional war, but basically a world war, right? Because if the Americans take the further step of, okay, well, Israel's being attacked, we now have to intercept the projectiles coming in hot, 400 seconds, within 400 seconds, they're going to hit the Golan Heights. We need to do something. We need to intercept. As soon as they press that big red button for the interception, right? And I know it's not as Simple as that. I'm simplifying it for
Yeah.
our audience, right? So let's say they click the big red button and they decide to intercept something in the Golan Heights, right? What happens then? Well, the Russians, right, are going to look at that and go, "Oh my gosh, the Americans are intervening. We need to do something as well," right? Because if they are willing to intercept over the Golan Heights, that means they're also willing to use missile systems in the Golan Heights, right? And for those of our dear listeners and readers who are not aware, when people say missile defense, really what they're talking about is a bunch of systems which can be, if you just gotta like turn a few knobs, twirl a few things here and there, and within a few hours, you can turn it into an offensive system, right? So every time a guy talks to you about missile defense, what he's really talking to you about is a system of vehicles. Right? You've got a radar vehicle, you've got the guy that fires out the projectiles and so on and so forth. It can be turned into an offensive system. So as soon as the Americans try and defend their so-called greatest ally, Israel, and they try and ward off an attack on the Golan Heights, that's World War III right there.
Yeah, I mean, I see this coming, and it's just we're not in a pl I think maybe some American strategists behind the collective that runs the Biden meat suit are thinking, well, this will help up our economy, this will stave off hyperinflation, we'll get the benefits of a wartime economy, we will benefit from this conflict the way Russia benefited from the Ukraine conflict, or at least we won't get hurt any worse than Russia did. And I don't think that's a good calculation. I mean, I think that's a very bad calculation. I think the stuff they're bringing in, you guys are bringing in the cavalry against light infantry with rifles, essentially. You're bringing it, you're the guy who's leading the heavy knights at Agincourt.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
That's
in
basically
fact,
what it
that's
is.
exactly what happens. You're sitting there the same way they sat in range of those arrows and got speared with them. You're sitting there on those big boats in range of like swarms of drones that you can't really fight off and that they can send at you far longer than you can send defense missiles.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And the worst part is no one seems to care. And if they do care, they seem to not be serious enough to implement something, right? Because any, like you were saying, good sir, anything here in this part of the region, in this part of the world, rather, where they decide, okay, we're going to defend Israel, that's going to happen, right? That's basically going to be the outcome. Because the Iranians have basically said that, listen, if you step out of the way, right, we will not hit your bases and your installations and your people. But if you decide to intervene on behalf of Israel and you try to intercept our stuff, we will consider your guys as a viable target, right? And again, like you were saying, good sir, if that's the case, then these American forces are toast because you've got basically a bunch of these tripwire forces, a couple hundred here, a few thousand there, so on and so forth. You're talking about what, 50,000 troops overall. If you add up everyone, spanning all the way down from Oman all the way up to like, some of the illegal bases that are still operating in Iraq or what have you, right? I mean, these guys do not have any missile defense systems. Some of them do. Some of them have like one or two Patriot batteries or what have you, but that's nowhere near enough, right? It's very simple, right? Saturation is the name of the game. You simply have to fire enough missiles, overload the system, and bam. You're in business basically. And so you're going to see basically if full-scale hostilities break out, like if it is the case that the Iranians hit the Golan Heights, like I think they're going to, and if it is the case that the Americans are foolish enough to try and intercept, you're looking at basically thousands to tens of thousands of dead Americans within the opening hours, right? Now, obviously, things can still change. Iranians can be like, okay, let's not hit the Golan Heights. Or the Americans could be like, okay, well, the attack is incoming. We have 400 seconds till they hit. We're not going to intercept, right? Those things can still happen. But if these other things happen, then that's the outcome. That's the deterministic outcome at this point, in the sense that, okay, you're going to have thousands of Americans dead. And it is the heavy knights at Agincourt. That is a very, very precise and accurate way of understanding it, good sir. So yeah, that's where we're headed towards. And unless someone is intelligent enough who is left in the collective Biden administration who knows this, I think that this is precisely where we're headed to.
This is just, we should, right after the Hamas attack, if America had foreign policy people who had two functioning brain cells to rub together, we immediately would have condemned it in the strongest terms publicly, of course, and said, we support Israel unconditionally. And behind the scenes, before this started, we would have opened the negotiations with, listen, you go into Gaza, you start like big civilian deaths. We will abstain when the votes come up in the UN Council. We will stop sending you weapons. We are not asking you to sit down at the negotiating table. We are telling you to sit down at the negotiating table. That would have been the smart American thing, because otherwise, you crazy bastards are going to get us killed. Lots of our men killed. I mean, that's just like, that's how it should have been handled. I mean, it wasn't. Because we have a bunch of diplomats in the American political system who have bought, like, who we have diplomats who are foolish enough to believe the official accounts. No diplomat should be stupid enough to do that. Every diplomat knows, look, let's be real with you. This is what we could do. Yeah, I know this is what we said. This is what we can do. We know what you can do. What are we going to do together? That's the whole point of it. We're so used to walking in, hello, we're America. We send the official orders from on high, like, we're the Assyrian bureaucracy here. We're going to give you this whole, we tell you what to do. And people are now telling us to go pound sand, and we're discovering, well, we don't have the Assyrian army to back us up anymore.
Oh, it's worse than that, good sir. The it's not simply that we don't have the Syria, the Americans don't have the Syrian army. They've got the what you might call it, the Venetian army, which is a bunch of mercenaries, right? And it's like, okay, well, we're gonna send this mercenary force over, and you know better than I do, good sir, that mercenary armies do not fight well unless you can pay them. And what's America's national debt at? 35 trillion. So yeah, so you won't be able to pay these guys pretty soon. So that's where they're at right now. I mean, I am flabbergasted that they actually went and did like a press release, and like, Biden himself, that meat puppet, he goes up there and he's like, yeah, our commitment is ironclad. Like, bro, you cannot fight, right? Why are you doing this to yourself? Like, you're making stuff so much more difficult. And now if the Americans don't do anything, it is basically the official end of the American Empire. So if Israel gets hit, if something really drastic happens, let's say Haifa and Tel Aviv are actually hit by the heavier strike systems of the Iranians, that's basically the end of the American Empire. Everyone around the world will basically say that, look, America's word doesn't mean anything anymore. This is like definitive 1000% proof, 1000% evidence that we can like do our thing in the world, and whatever America says, you can just ignore it, right? So he's put himself, the collective Biden, right, via those statements the night before, I believe. He's now put the American system and the empire of lies is now in that situation where no one takes it seriously anymore. So if he had not done so, he could have still saved some kind of face. But now that's the situation they're in. And yeah, I mean.
Afghanistan was like, Afghanistan basically, the way to have you, he could have handled that whole thing with, like, okay, guys, we'll leave the weapons here for you if you're discreet about it. We'll keep sending money your way so long as everybody gets out of here quietly and neatly, and we don't have like a complete shit show of an evacuation. We'll afterwards keep up the like good relationships with the Taliban on the DL, because we don't want any trouble with you and you don't want any trouble with us. I mean, that's what a smart diplomatic policy towards that withdrawal was. As it was, we came out of it like not looking like, we're bringing this to a peaceful end after like a long occupation. We came out of it looking like we ran away with our tails between our legs. We
Yeah,
didn't
that's basically
even
what
know
happened.
how to stage that. That's what you stage that. You could that's this is the this is where the world of diplomacy comes in. And it's obvious American diplomats have no idea what diplomacy is. This was something that could have been avoided. You Afghanistan, you screwed up. you left your allies behind knowing that they were going to be facing trouble for having worked with the Americans. That means now that nobody in that region is ever going to want to work with you again. And that's kind of an important thing, you know. Okay, we've got your back if you work with us, is kind of like, you know, that's, I mean, that's very important worldwide. I think it's particularly important in that area.
It's very important because the Americans are not in the same religious group, so they're not primarily Muslim, and ethnicity-wise, they're very different, and they're basically several thousand miles away, right? So, no, like when the Afghanistan withdrawal happened, right? All the other American puppets in the region, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, these guys, they were shaking in their boots. And the Americans gave them assurances, but I think deep down in their subconscious mind, right, in their psyche, they realized that, okay, we cannot trust the Americans anymore. And if I had to make a guess, right, most likely the reason why Saudi Arabia and Iran, right, via Chinese mediation, the reason why they patched up their ties has to do with the Afghanistan withdrawal. Because the Saudis have realized that, look, we can continue doing this nonsense that we're doing. We can continue being like this reactionary regime. We can continue doing all this stuff. In which case, the Iranians will eventually hit us, right? Via direct means or indirect means, and the Americans will not protect us. So we might as well make peace with the Iranians now while we can. And we're kind of going to make some noises saying nice things about the Americans. But when push comes to shove, we're not going to do anything, right? It's not happened yet, good sir. I think Saudi Arabia has not made a statement yet with regard to, okay, we are going to not give you our airspace. But once they make that statement, that's where, you know, the rest of the region is headed, right? Already all the smaller guys have made statements that we're not going to help you out. Jordan obviously has protests and all these other things happening right now. The Jordanian puppet king, he is going to be ousted soon. He's going to be ousted soon, and I do not think he has much of a choice. He has to go 110% in onto Team America. Because if he doesn't go on to Team America, what's going to happen is, whatchamacallit, the Americans are going to be like, all right, you're not our puppet anymore. So, you know, good luck handling those protesters. We're out of here, right? And at that point, yeah, he's basically screwed. So I think Jordan is in a tricky spot, but I think Jordan will still allow the Americans leeway simply because, okay, well, if we don't let the Americans operate in our airspace, that's kind of the end of us. So. And for those of you guys, dear listeners and readers, who are kind of history buffs, you should know that Iraq actually had a monarchy. It also had a Hashemite dynasty. And those guys were actually murdered, right? The entire family was murdered by a coup. And that coup was then replaced by another coup in Iraq. And that became the Ba'athist government of Saddam Hussein, right? So this is a part of the world where betrayal and, like, you know, cozying up to the Americans, it's viewed very, very, in a very, very frowned manner, right? So either you go 110% on Team America and you like squish all opposition, or you're going to get your comeuppance. So no, I mean I don't feel too sympathetic to Jordan. You know, he is a traitor in my eyes, but I can understand why he sides with the Americans basically.
I think one of the things I'm seeing here is Jordan and Saudi Arabia are facing like the population. I'm saying America would have a problem starting a war with Israel simply because it's so unpopular on the American streets. The Jordanian streets, the Saudi streets? No, I mean, they. You know, the kings there, American power won't keep you in power when there's a coup. You know, why it's not going to keep you in power when the natives, when you get the Bastille, people storming the palace. And if you don't stop doing that, that's what's going to happen. You know, I mean, the people are going to storm the palace over Israel. I mean, Turkey is starting to feel it. You know, all of our real close, like pocket regimes that we've had in our pocket. They're all feeling just this enormous pressure from the population. I mean, Palestine is loved and Israel's hated in that region. That's just the way it is.
And all this talk about normalization, you can chuck it all out the window. There will be no normalization, right? Even if the Saudi puppet and the Jordanian puppet and all these other guys try to do something, at this point, it's just so beyond the pale. The Israelis, I think the last time I checked the numbers, it's like what, over 35,000 have been killed. You're looking at over 75,000 wounded. I mean, that's right there, right? And if you add in all the missing people, right, you get to like numbers close to like over 150,000, approaching the 200,000 mark. So basically, what out of the 2.5+ million people who live in the Gaza Strip, you're looking at 1 in 10 of them almost either being dead, wounded, or missing. So it's basically a genocide and ethnic cleansing, right? Just by the numbers alone, that's sufficient, right? I mean, there's people out there who say things like, okay, look, the word genocide is being overused all the time. We don't know what it means, yada, yada, yada. And, there's some kernel of truth to the talking point that, okay, well, some people do overuse the word, but there's actually a very, very specific definition for genocide.
Yeah,
And the
Lemkin.
definition, yeah, there's a very specific definition. And the definition is, okay, look, partial or full, right? Partial or full destruction of a racial, ethnic, or religious group, right? Which is either intended, right? Or it's indirectly brought about, right? So via this definition, right? So direct, indirect, or what have you, right? So what does that mean? It means that if you try to starve someone, right? So what the British did in the 1770s with the Bengali famine, where they engineered it, right? And they killed 10 million Bengalis, that's the genocide, right? What else? Holodomor, right?
Yeah,
Where
the
like the
Holodomor.
Soviets did that thing. Yeah, the Soviets did the thing to the Ukrainians. That's a genocide as well, right? And so you can actually define these things very well, right? The only people who kind of like are very, very adamant that no, you can't define these things, they're the kind of people who realize that, okay, well, once these things have actual definitions, right, the world, part of the world I'm living in is going to, have its comeuppance. So that's the reason why, like, the Israelis, even though they have this, whatchamacallit, oh, we are this
The
most moral
most
army,
moral army
the
in the
most,
world.
yeah, we are this, we are that, but they're very, very horrified by what's happening in the international criminal courts and all these other things. I mean, they pretend that these things don't matter, but they realize that, look, if we are on the losing side and these court rulings stand, then we're in big trouble, right? So no, that's where they're at. And they can try and say stuff like, okay, genocide, this is a meaningless word, it doesn't mean anything. They're just wrong. That's basically what I'm going to say on that.
I think you can make a good case that the Gaza ongoing thing is starting to qualify for the Lemkin style genocide. My problem with the word genocide is you get stuff like the in America, oh my God, the trans genocide. The world is literally killing gender variant, blah, blah, blah. The word genocide in the United States has become like fascist and Nazi. It's like what it tells me. Usually, the people who use it have no real idea of what's going on in the Gaza Strip, why it's happening, don't even really care that much about the dying Palestinian, civilians and children, except insofar as they can beat their breasts and say, see what a noble person is. I care about these people. So, I mean, I think for that, I think a lot of people just. Discourse on the internet has just gotten so damned overheated. Everything's a genocide. Everybody wants to literally kill people. It's so, that was again, I'm actually finally working on that essay. I'd been really busy at my day job, but I'm trying to get that finished. It's like
Oh,
I
nice,
think
nice.
that's the problem has been that, we just have so many conversations. They immediately have to go towards there is a bad guy who's irredeemably bad, who's evil. He's Darth Vader, he's Sauron, blah, blah, blah. Then you have the people that are fighting on his side, and they're entirely good and noble people, unless sometimes they make a mistake. Mistakes are made, but we, everything has to become this Manichaean battle of good and evil. And it's like, the world isn't that simple.
Of course, of course. But what I would say to that simply is that there is such a thing as a legitimate use of these words, even if
Yeah.
you've got lots of people using it in the wrong way, right? And I think this is one of those situations where, based on the definition I outlined earlier, right? And this is kind of the definition used not just by the UN, but like several other international bodies, right? So now we could take the attitude that, you know what, the international bodies, the UN, these things don't matter, right? The definition they're using, they don't matter, right? In which case, we're in a brave new world, right? You're literally in a world where it's not just might makes right, but rather it's sub-state actor terrorism makes right. Like, that's literally the world you're signing up for at that point. Because if people get the attitude, like I always ask people, some people always ask me, enough, what are your attitudes on international law, these sorts of things, right? ICJ, all these sort of things, right? I wrote an entire essay on it. And this was the essay I did on the apartheid nature of Israel and all these other things, right? But I basically said that, look, we all know that it's a big, dog and pony show. Most of these things are fake, but it's a good thing in the sense that people believe in international law, right? Because if they didn't, there would be far more savagery and barbarism, right? And the Americans, at least when they give some noise and say that, oh, we care about international law, at least that keeps some of their activity slightly civilized. Because if these things did not exist, they would be using chemical weapons, biochemical agents, and what have you out in the open, right? Now, behind
One of
back
our
doors, they do that.
first big,
Yeah, go ahead.
big mistakes was in 2001 when we publicly declared we were going to capture, torture non-combatants, take them to black sites. Look, everybody knew we do things like that. Everybody knows governments do nasty things to stop nastier things from happening. You don't say it publicly. You don't come out and tell people that. You've now told people that American soldiers, embassy people, and officials are fair game because, like, well, if they're not going to follow the rules, why should we either? You don't
And
do
that's a
that.
that's actually an excellent point now that you mention it, because 2001 was the year after which all these American embassies started getting attacked. And contrary to popular opinion, Al-Qaeda and all these other groups, these Khawarij groups, they're actually in the minority, right? In the Islamic world, the Khawarij groups are viewed as crazy by everyone else, right? But when the Americans went, shall we say, public with their, oh, we're gonna torture people, we're gonna do all this, we're gonna fuck you up, Lady Liberty and Uncle Sam are coming for you, all this other nonsense. That's when really the slow boiling the frog. I mean, Israel's being boiled right now, and people are talking about this boiling the frog scenario, but America's being boiled for the last 20 plus years or so, right? And if you look at the so-called scoreboard, right, people say, oh, look at all these, we killed 4.5 million Muslims over here, yay, USA, Team USA. There's people who believe, who think like this, right? They're like, oh, look at all the millions of people we killed. I mean, in the process of doing so, you yourself have lost tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, dead and wounded. Your country's bankrupt. Drug overdoses, suicides are, off the scale. You've got like gang warfare on your streets. The border is open, and you're about to be conquered, right? So I don't think that's a that's a victory, my good friend, right? So no, like the Americans publicly started talking about this stuff, and this is why international law, even though it's a farce in more ways than one, I think it's a good idea for international law, the concept at least, to exist. Because if it does not, you have full-scale barbarism, right? And which is precisely why the Iranians are basically at that position where they're like, okay, well, the Vienna Convention, which gives protection to diplomats and embassy people, if that's no longer valid, then we don't have a choice. We have to basically strike back. And there has to be blood for blood, right? There has to be some kind of vengeance, because if not, we're basically giving the Americans and the Israelis like an open license to do whatever they want, right? And that's basically what it comes down to. When the Israelis blew up that embassy, I immediately knew that this was going to be the next flashpoint, right? And yeah, that's where we're headed, good sir. And the Americans and the Israelis are going to have a lot of hurt next couple of days or so. And I do
I
not
expect
expect.
it fully. Yeah, the doom is coming.
The doom cometh. Yeah, no, the doom cometh. And I don't think the American servicemen there are safe. There's gonna be thousands to tens of thousands of Americans dead, right? And at that point, you have to ask yourself, okay, well, does America even have an army left to fight? And the answer to that question is no, it does not. Unless it wants to draft 2 million people, in which case there will be protests on the streets and the country will fall apart, basically. And then Russia and China moves in for the kill. So I
Draft
don't
two
think they're
million. We don't. I'm not really sure we have 2 million citizens who are capable of passing the draft, passing the physicals, and passing the IQ tests right now. I'm not entirely sure we've got 2 million people to draft.
Right, but
It's
even
just
if
like
we,
it's a, yeah, even if we did, it's like. We don't have the manufacturing base we were starting to build in 1917 that by the 30s helped us, helped us put us in such a strong position in World War II. I mean, the American belief is we won World War II. What really happened is our factories won World War II. Our soldiers did a brave, noble job, but what really happened is we were able to pump out a lot more material than the Germans could.
Yeah, it was a
We
game of
don't have
economics.
that anymore. That's,
Yeah,
we don't
precisely.
have it. We don't have it. Trying to build it back would take decades. If you could get past the sclerotic American bureaucracy to do it, it's like, it's almost like, I swear, I feel like a lot of this fascination that we have with the low green, low carbon lifestyle, we're going to live a greener lifestyle, is the PMC's way of trying to deal with the fact that, we're not going to have this many available resources. We're not going to have these kind of supply lines anymore. It's we're going to be lowering our carbon footprint. It's just we're going to be lowering it because we don't have the economic wherewithal to live the lifestyles we've been living anymore.
Yeah, precisely. No, whatchamacallit, you're absolutely correct, good sir. Like, the Americans, even if they drafted 2 million people, they're gonna be very, very low tier conscripts. It's not gonna be like the Vietnam War era where, okay, these are able-bodied men who can actually fight and what have you, right? Rather, it's just going to be this bunch of folks who, shall we say, are very, very sheltered, that's putting it very, very politely, right? And the minute something goes kaboom, they're going to make a run for it. And we know this is going to happen because, like, there's American mercenaries in the Ukraine, right? Everyone knows this. There's American mercenaries in the Ukraine, and they always go with like a happy face, and they like show pictures of their sniper rifle and all their tattoos, and they're like, yeah, I'm gonna kill some Ruskies, right? And then in the first week of the war, they get hit by artillery fire, and then they're like, oh shit, oh, air support, where's air support, right? And they yell for air support doesn't show up, and they realize that, okay, this is the real shit, right? This is not one of those like third world countries or what have you, which doesn't have like an actual army you can fight, that can fight back against you. Rather, you're in an actual war, and this is what's gonna happen to you. Your leg's gonna get blown off. You're going to get decapitated and so on and so forth, right? So, no, the Americans are in for a world of hurt. I mean, if they want to fight a war against Iran, I mean, the Iranians are happy. They're like, all right, America, show up, ahlan wa sahlan. I mean, they're not like Arabic, but they'd say the equivalent in Persian. But no, they're more than happy to oblige the Americans because from their point of view, it's like, you know what? Your time is up. If you want to struggle a bit more, go for it, right? Now, the Iranians are clever, right? They know that, okay, time is on our side. We don't have to go 1000% world war mode, right? What we're gonna do is we're gonna hit Israel, whether it's the Golan Heights or these other places, and we're gonna control the tempo of the escalation, right? And at that point, if the Israelis decide, you know what, we've been struck by Iran, we're gonna go full guns blazing, then the Iranians are like, all right, now that you've responded in the wrong sort of way, now we can escalate even further, right? So Iran is a very, very rational actor. Iran knows that we control the ladder of escalation here. We are going to boil the frog known as Israel. We control all this. What can we do to make their lives a living hell, right? In the process. And this is where the other thing comes in, which I think we should definitely discuss in depth today, which is what I think a lot of people are not understanding, in a sense that all these American intelligence and Israeli intelligence agencies are like, oh, Iran's going to attack in 24 hours. And then they're like, no, it's going to be in 48 hours. And then they're like, no, it's going to be tonight. And then they're like, no, it's going to be 72 hours from now, right? And I'm just laughing. I'm having the best time of my life. I'm like, this is the best. Like, the Iranian friends have done the best thing possible, which is like, they are now making, like you were saying, good sir, in our Telegram conversations, they're now making the Israelis jump at their own shadows, right? And so they're basically screwed. They're basically screwed because they have no idea. Like, if anyone thinks that these intelligence outfits have any idea when the Iranian attack is coming, I've got a very, very big bridge in London to sell you. Like, a really big one. And it's, several centuries old, right? So, no, that's the
Yeah.
situation they're in. And they have no idea what to do now.
They no, I mean, this we are so in over our heads. We don't understand if every day this conflict continues, and I mean, I should add, I every day this conflict continues, more Palestinians die, including more Palestinian civilians, women, and children. But every day that it goes on, Israel gets a little more demoralized. Israel understands, oh, wait, we can't win this fight. There is no winning that. I think most of, like, I have a fair number of right-wing Israeli followers on my Substack, as well as a lot of esoteric Hitlerists. I might be the only person I know who's got that combination, but I find a lot, they've become a lot more, these are like nice guys. I like them. I disagree with their politics, but they've become a lot more circumspect, a lot quieter, because I think they're starting to, they're past the bargain, the denial, anger, and bargaining grief stage, and they're hitting acceptance. They're like, okay, we can't. There is no ending to this war that ends with us triumphing completely and controlling every piece of land from the river to the sea.
No, it's not gonna happen. And I think in Jerusalem Post or one of these other places, there's already like one of these policymaker people, right? Who've basically said, what you might call it, Israel has already lost the war, right? I think let me actually see what it's called. I've saved it here. So Israel is losing the war. This was in December. I mean, there's a guy, I think it was a few days ago actually. We have lost the war. No, not this one. Not this one. War that Israel lost. But there was a guy like about 2 or 3 days ago who basically said that, okay, we have to say the unspeakable, which is that we have lost the war. And the reason we've lost the war is because no matter how it ends, we cannot negotiate a pre-October 7th security situation. The security situation is always going to be this bad. I'm actually going to finish up that essay for Sir Kevin Barrett for Truth Jihad. That's the name of his radio show, I believe. But no, I'm sending that over. And in that guest essay, I'm going to make that exact same point, which is that the pre-October 7th security situation is never coming back. And the only way you can have some semblance of tranquility and peace come back is if you have a negotiated settlement. But no, like you're 100% right, good sir. Like there's no way out of this at this point. They can kill lots of people, no doubt. They can even enter Rafah. They can like butcher lots of women and kids. But like all these asymmetric attacks, all these sub-state actors, all these like slow boil the frog type things, they're gonna keep continuing as is.
Yeah, it's Israel has the problem that Israelis can complain this is not genocide. They can have Hasbara flood the internet with posts explaining this is not genocide. The world thinks it is a genocide. There, and the world is behaving accordingly. You're starting to lose business partners. Boycott, divestment, sanctions was not really that big a thing in the United States outside like a small circle of largely, socialists and radicals. You never really heard much about it. BDS is now on everybody's tongue. How long can Israel survive? I mean, it's not even like Israel would be North Korea, because North Korea has China on its borders to give it money. I mean, you'd be North Korea surrounded by people that wanted to squash North Korea.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Hello. Okay. Well, yeah, we've been having
Okay,
some
so it's
audio problems today. No, that
yeah,
is
no
fine.
worries, no
Glad to hear.
worries. No, but what I was saying, good sir, was and you should definitely expand on that point more because I think you can say it much better than me. But what I was trying to say before I think I had the audio issue was that the Israelis call themselves a pioneering people. They're like, oh, we made the desert bloom, we did all this other stuff. But when you actually look at that land, you can't really grow anything there. And it's a $600 billion economy. Okay, that's great. But where does the $600 billion come from? It's primarily from like technology, and it's primarily from all these other things, which is like, shall we say, they're not really they're not really physical goods and services, right? So no, like it's one of those things where, okay, I have $600 billion, but 80% of it is from services, and then you have some manufacturing stuff, and I guess we have some agriculture in the form of olive trees, which we stole from the Palestinians. All right, sure. All right, bro. Like, if that's what you want to do, and if that's something you think, oh, if the Americans stop supporting us, we can still fight the rest of the world. No, you can't. Right. So that's how it is. But yeah, no, if good sir, if you could actually expand on that point, which I think is a very, very important one, namely that the Israelis actually cannot be self-sufficient ever, given their geography.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it's simple geopolitics. You know, unless you control the land from the Nile to the Euphrates, which, you're not controlling the land from the Mediterranean to the Jordan, so I don't think you're going to get that. That piece of land will always be reliant on imports. I mean, in Roman times, they were getting grain out of Egypt. That's it's not, you can't grow a big enough, you can't grow enough land there. There's not enough water there, no matter how much you bully the neighbors. You can only do so much with irrigation. That's anybody who's telling you that, like the Isra any Israeli who's still saying, we're going to win, we're going to defeat Rafah, we're going to eradicate Hamas once and for all. As I keep saying again, anybody who is saying that, you're not talking with a serious person. You're talking with somebody who's very emotional, who wants to engage in chest thumping. The proper answer to that is not even you and what army. It's like, well, let's start with you and what squadron, and we'll work up from there. You're making a lot of promises here, but you don't have what it takes to back it up. In the case of becoming self-reliant on agriculture, there is no way you will ever be self-reliant with 15 million people. You are going to have to rely on your neighbors and on international trade. That's been the way it's been in Judea since those people came in and took it from the Canaanites.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think the Israelis deep down they know all these facts, but they pretend otherwise. They pretend that actually no, the Americans will save us. Actually no, we will get these imports. Actually no, all this other stuff will happen because we're chosen, because God Almighty has favored us and so on and so forth. But I think they're beginning to realize that this is all just wishful thinking. I think the Iranians a few hours ago before we started speaking. And I was still working away on my essay for Sir Kevin Barrett, right? But as I was working away on it, there was a news pop-up because I'm subscribed to all these Telegram channels for like geopolitics or what have you, right? But a news pop-up appeared, and I'm like, okay, what's going on here? The Iranians had seized a Portuguese cargo ship in the Straits of Hormuz, right? Now it's Portuguese, but really it's owned by an Israeli billionaire, right? But what the Iranians are showing to them by this action is that, look, we control the Straits of Hormuz. And so America, if you wanna fuck with us, right? This is what's gonna happen to you, right? This is what's gonna happen to you. Like, you think you can save Israel, you think you can like supply it, you think that you can keep sending it weapons and all these other things. We haven't even started yet. Like, escalation-wise, we control the escalation ladder. If you wanna keep doing this bullshit, we are going to embargo, blockade Israel from the river to the sea and all across the Mediterranean and so on and so forth, right? You do not have any strategic depth. And if you think you do, well, we're going to demonstrate to you over and over again that you don't.
I mean, even it's anything that happens in the Strait of Hormuz ties up oil shipping until that conflict is resolved. It's going to make oil very expensive. It's going to limit the stuff in oil. There is no scenario in the real world. I mean, maybe if Dr. Manhattan comes down and zaps them, you could do this. There's no scenario for an American-Iranian war that's over in a week.
Yep,
There's no
exactly.
scenario for one that isn't, that won't take less than like 2 years, maybe more like 5 to 10 of,
Yep,
like, I mean,
precisely,
troops coming
precisely.
in. During that time, oil doesn't flow from Hormuz.
No, like you try to explain this simple fact to people and they just reply to you in the dumbest sort of ways, right? But like everything you and I have said the past 5 minutes or so, this has been known. Not just like 1 year ago or 5 years ago. This was known like from the very inception of Israel, right?
To
And
peak
like
oil,
everyone.
people were talking about this in the 70s.
Yeah, like
Yeah.
John Michael
Yep.
Greer made this point in his essay. Like he wrote an essay in 2012 and he's like, okay, this is the future of Israel and here's what's going to happen to this place, right? And the reason we know this is because every few years or so, this happens, right? The Westerners try to form like an outpost in this part of the world. It's basically like a de facto crusader state slash colony, and here's why it's always going to fail, right? Because there's always going to be a point in time in which the money dries up, or the resources dries up, or the weapons dry up. And it doesn't have to be forever. It only has to be for a few years, and then everyone around the region coalesces and destroys the place, right? So Israel is simply going through that phase. And it's always related to the systole and the diastole, right? The contraction of the Islamic world these past few years or so is now basically over, right? It's only going to get better from this point onwards. Now, when I say it's only going to get better, what I mean by that is the military situation, the overall strength and whatnot of these nations or whatnot. I'm not saying with regard to like other factors. In terms of other factors, things might get worse, right? But in terms of the military prowess and all these other things, right? The Islamic countries are going to get better, right? So no, the Israelis need to negotiate. They should have negotiated yesterday, honestly.
I
But
mean, I've
the
been
longer.
saying that since October 7th. It was like, look, you have to have a negotiated settlement to this, or you're going to get yourself into a meat grinder where lots of people are going to die and you're going to end with a stalemate. But does anybody ever listen to me now?
I mean, a lot of people don't listen to reason anymore, good sir. So, I mean, let's see what happens. Honestly, I think if the Iranians do what I think they're going to do, which is they strike the Golan Heights, the Israelis might just, piss themselves in fear. And at that point, they might be forced to a negotiating table. If not, and they escalate to World War III, that's a different discussion. But
I mean,
no.
I don't think they're like, I don't think they're going to escalate to World War III. Iran is in the place. Like I had said before in Telegram, I have my own suspicions about like the numbers of nukes that Israel has. I suspect that 80 to 400 number was exaggerated. And I think they also realize, even if they have 80 nukes, they realize there's no scenario where they nuke Iran where they don't get hit with dirty bombs in several cities. There is none. You know, there is no scenario where they do a first strike on Iran where they don't become world pariahs.
And
That's, you know.
no, and John Michael Greer, he made the exact same point. He's like, there's no scenario in which Israel can use a nuke without being turned into glass because it's simply too small. If it does anything close to the Samson option, in the sense that okay, European capitals are going to be hit. Well, as soon as Moscow gets hit, right, the S-550 system is going to intercept a few of the incoming nukes that are coming in, and maybe one or two hits, and you have hundreds of thousands, maybe a few million people dead. But what does Moscow do in response? Well, fire off 10 times more nukes at Israel and just destroy that place, right? So, and in terms of like what people say about, okay, well, we have to nuke Gaza. Well, if you nuke Gaza, then the radioactive ash is going to hit you. And everyone in Tel Aviv is going to be affected. And that's what, a couple 10,000, maybe 100,000 plus people dead in the opening hours or so. So people are not serious. People who say stuff like this, they don't know how nukes actually work. No, I mean, the people are still of the mindset that nukes mean something. They don't. Nukes are a defensive weapon primarily. You cannot use them in an offensive capacity. If you think you can, then again, I've got a very, very nice bridge in London, which is several centuries old. I can sell that to you if you wish.
The
But we're
only
about
way
to.
you can get away with it is if you have the kind of backing behind you. You know, would Russia's backers stand behind them if, say, Russia had a limited nuclear exchange on like NATO and in Ukraine, for example? I think a lot of them would. And a lot of people would realize, well, okay, if we take the second strike, Russia takes the third strike, and that's going to be a killer. So Israel doesn't have enough bombs to do that. America might have them. Russia might have them. America doesn't. France doesn't. UK doesn't.
That's precisely it. That's precisely it. And Russians will get away with it simply because everyone knows that when Russia fights in Ukraine, it's not fighting against Ukraine, but rather it's fighting against the collective West and NATO, right? So, the Russians can get away with it if their diplomatic corps basically tries to justify to China and the rest of the world that, listen, we had no choice because if we didn't do this, then the Americans would be like using something else on us, right? So whether it was like a nuclear strike or a biochemical weapon or so, what have you, right? So this was preemptive, right? Now, obviously, a lot of people will not accept that argument, But Russia will not be hit in response, right? Russia would not become a world pariah, and so on and so forth. Israel, meanwhile, Israel has no justification of a similar sort, right? So its nukes are basically as good as useless. And in terms of like what else can it do against the Iranians, I mean, Iran is simply too far away. Like, if you don't use your nuclear weapons against Iran, right, which, you know, that like we just mentioned a few moments ago, like there's several reasons why you can't. But let's say, okay, so nukes are off the table. Well, what else do you have? Well, you've got these like American jets from the 1970s and 1980s, which you have like large numbers of. So F-16s and all these other modifications, right? So people forget that Iran is larger than Alaska, right? It's like 1.6 million square kilometers. It's got 90 million people. It's basically like a mountain fortress, and it's what, 2,000 plus miles away. So even to get to Iran, you would need to use like the refueling vehicles for the jets. And the refueling vehicles are what you might call it. They're just like modified Boeing 747s. Some of them are like modified Shadow Fortresses, right? But the general point is the same, which is that they are extremely slow, they are extremely easy to spot, and they are very, very, what you call it? They're very, very conspicuous on radar. So, okay, so Israel's like, all right, here's our master plan. We're going to use our fleet of F-16s, which is the fourth largest in the world, and we can only have this fleet because of American money, right? So we're going to use this, and we're going to bomb Iran, right? Okay, so to bomb Iran, what do we need? We need these refueling vehicles, and we're going to refuel over where? Oh, we're going to refuel on top of Iraqi airspace, or we're going to refuel on top of Jordanian airspace. Well, as soon as you start doing that, you're going to be shot out of the sky. You're going to be shot out of the sky. And as soon as you stop to refuel, the jets are going to be targeted. Let's say the jets get out of the way miraculously. Okay, well, now you've just lost a bunch of these expensive refueling vehicles, which cost several billion dollars, right? So it's a complete lose-lose situation. There's not going to be any scenario where it's like, oh, Iran's going to be bombed and all this other stuff's going to happen. It's just like child's play. It's absolute child's play.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I think it just amazes me that American, I'm an autodidact. I'm self-taught. I'm looking at America's diplomatic corps, which I mean, you're talking like what's supposed to be what they called our best and our brightest. It's like, what a generation of idiots. We're rule. I mean, that's the thing that, it worries me not that these people are. Not the great UN scenario that like they're going to do Agenda 230 and they're going to shove me in pods and make me eat bugs. At least then I'd have a clever, evil opponent. This is more like we're ruled by idiots and they're steering us into a global war. It's like we're ruled by Larry Moe and Curly. I
No,
mean,
it's that's the situation, definitely. That they're not impressive people. They're not impressive people.
it's like I just America was never good at foreign policy because we're too young a nation. We don't have the history. I mean, it's like outside of the southern United States, America has never been defeated in a military conflict on its own soil. I mean, that's something most people, we've never experienced a serious, colossal defeat. We're about to, but I mean, we haven't in the past.
And I think we already mentioned in like episodes 3 and 4 of our conversation that without a proper defeat, without your head being rubbed in the dirt, you're not going to have a balanced view of the world. You're always going to overestimate yourself. And I think that's what's going on here. I think the Americans are overestimating themselves. They seriously think they can fight against Iran when they don't have the ability or the weaponry or what have you to do it anymore. So let's wait and see what happens, but I think the Americans are about to find out why it is that the Iranians are now a great power officially, right? And people outside the English-speaking world have already affirmed this. They're like, okay, the Iranians are already a great power. We just simply have to acknowledge it at this point, right? But the Americans haven't done so yet. I think like Iran, actually, Iran and Syria are one of the few countries that America does not have any diplomatic ties with. So Bhutan is a weird country. It does not have diplomatic relations with most of the world, so that doesn't count. Iran and Syria, they don't have diplomatic relations with those guys, and I think that's about it. Maybe there's like a fourth or fifth country I'm missing, but no, the Americans are not talking to them. They don't understand their opponent. They're too young a nation, like you said, good sir. And We are headed for a collision course, unless cooler heads prevail.
Yeah, and it's like we could, the Iranians are going to wind up, thanks to our efforts to control the spread of Islamic terrorism. I suspect before it's over, we're going to have Islamic republics in several other currently secular run countries. I think that model may well be the model that a lot of people use for the next spread of Islam inward, which I expect, I expect our religions have moved versus each other, like boundaries have changed and things over the years. And I'm expecting this time we're going to see, I expect France to become majority Islam within the next 50 years, maybe earlier, for example. I'm expecting to see stuff like that. And I'm expecting to see a lot of countries looking to the Islamic Republic as like, okay, well, so this is a way, we don't have to deal with that decadent, failing Western system. Here's an alternative.
And the thing is, they're going to do it even though Iran is majority Shia. They're going to be like, you know what? Maybe us Sunni Muslims can learn a thing or two from Iran, right? Iran does not bow to the American, emperor, right? They don't bow to the Empire of Lies. They do their own thing. They build their own weapons. They've been sanctioned. They've gone through hardship. But hey, everyone in this part of the world has gone through hardship. So we should probably do what Iran does. And like the Taliban, right? The Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, right? And the Islamic Republic of Iran. These guys are now the benchmark in the region with regard to here's what a real anti-American society looks like, right? And I mean, the Pakistanis are, they are notorious for having like so many like military dictatorships over the past few years. But I think you're right, good sir. I think if there is going to be a shoe to drop, it would be Pakistan. Like if Pakistan becomes an actual Islamic Republic rather than like in its namesake, right? Then we have like a domino effect, right? And the Iraqis and the Jordanians and the Lebanese, like these borders are not real borders. So if there's ever like an Islamic Renaissance in these types of places with regard to like governance and getting away from America and this like so-called rules-based, or rules for thee but not for me, right? If they want to get away from that kind of stuff, then it's going to involve the borders being destroyed. So, yeah, Pakistan, those guys, and then what? Turkey? I mean, Turkey is headed in that direction. Like, people like Erdogan, but after this fiasco, they're like, okay, Erdogan's not strong enough. We need someone even stronger. We need someone who's more of a far-right extremist, basically, right? So, and yeah, once that happens, what else do we have left? We have Saudi Arabia. I mean, Saudi Arabia only survives because of American help and money. So Saudi Arabia is a basket case. And yeah, that's that part of the world. That's where they're headed. And Egypt, I think Egypt is probably going to go in that direction as well. So.
That's kind of what I'm expecting to see, because one of the things that has been holding the Ummah back for the past 70 years, like, I'm sh ashamed to say it, but it is true, it's American influence.
Yeah, precisely. Precisely.
Why do they
That's
hate us? They hate our freedoms. It's like, no, they hate the fact because we oppress them, you moron.
Yeah, they hate your empire. That's what they hate.
It's like, yeah.
You run the empire of lies. So, empire of lies, Islam means submission. So, you have to submit to Allah Most High, and one of the things about submission is you have to be truthful, right? So by definition, you have to be against the empire of lies because that's what it does. It lies.
I found another interesting piece about my next piece. I'm talking about Copernicus, and I discovered people were talking about heliocentrism in the Ummah like a good 6 century, 5, 6 centuries before Copernicus.
Yeah, precisely. Precisely. Oh, I just got a breaking news. Okay, I
Okay,
have to
what's the
probably
breaking
read this
news?
out. Okay, so USAID employee was shot and killed, apparently by an Israeli police officer, following an altercation. Okay, see, this is what I was talking to you about. This country, this so-called like Zionist country, they can call themselves a country, but they're basically a terrorist state at this point. So they're now openly killing in broad daylight. This happened in broad daylight. The guy shot the employee in broad daylight. So you cannot support this guy. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, and
I mean,
USAID pulling out, they've lost. I mean, I don't think people understand the level of unconditional support Americans had for Israel, the love Americans had for Israel, and how
It's
that has
gone.
turned on a dime. It's gone. I mean, you're never
It's gone.
getting
It's just
that
gone.
back. It's never coming back.
Yeah,
The
it's never
best you
coming
could hope
back.
for is you're going to be just like everybody else and judged just like everybody else. And when you commit genocide, you're going to be accused of genocide.
Yeah, that's precisely it. And if you're killing aid workers out in broad daylight, you're not going to get the nicer part, right? You're not going to get the carrot, you're going to get the stick, right? So there is going to be a negotiated end. There is going to be a one-state solution. I agree with all of that, but there's definitely going to be war crime tribunals. There's definitely going to be vigilante justice. There's going to be a lot of that, right? And the more you do this stuff of like killing aid workers or like, oh, World Central Kitchen, like blowing up their vehicles and stuff. If you're doing that kind of stuff, then you're just bringing it, you're making it worse for yourself, right? So, no, the Israelis are a bunch of addicts at this point. They are drunk on the blood of innocents, whether it's women, children, the elderly, aid workers, and all that other stuff. And now I'm not really sure what, like, they definitely do not have a plan. I think what's happening is their society is buckling, and the Iranians are just making it even worse for them by doing all these like feints and all these other things. So when they're jumping in their shadows, right? Jumping with their shadows rather. They're like doing more and more heinous crimes as a result because
Yeah.
they don't know what else to do.
For me, one of the big defining moments when I knew, like, okay, it's over, Netanyahu trying to draft the Haredim. I was like, okay, you are so desperate for right now for men that you're willing to draft the ultra Orthodox. These people, they're going to be useless as soldiers. You're going to alienate your coalition, but your back is so against the wall that you're flailing wildly. This is your last chance. I mean, that's what I
Yeah.
saw there. This is not the reaction of somebody who's confident he's going to win in the next several weeks.
Yeah. And the thing is, good sir, like you were saying, drafting the Haredi. Well, okay, if you draft the Haredi and you're like, okay, we're gonna invade Rafah. Like, are you gonna invade Rafah with the Haredi? Because if you invade Rafah with the Haredi, they're gonna get smoked. That's basically what's gonna happen, right? So I don't know what these guys are up to, honestly. Like, they think that this is all just a joke at this point. Like, what do you think? Like, do you really think that people are this dumb? Like, they don't see through this facade? Like, they see your weakness. They see that you cannot do anything, right? No, I mean, the Haredi are cannon fodder, like you said, good sir. And I don't really know what they're up to. I think Netanyahu, I think he sees the writing on the wall. Maybe he's hoping for the Americans to like send a private jet over so that he can escape the country. But no, like at least with the Israelis, the good thing about the Israelis is that their lobbying group is far more powerful than the Ukrainian lobbying group. So, like, if Zelensky asks for a private jet and Netanyahu asks for a private jet, we both know that Netanyahu gets first dibs, right? So maybe he's counting on that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're basically at a place where, I hate to use this one, and if any of my Israeli followers are listening, I apologize for the comparison, but they're essentially at the same place that not Hitler was in the bunker.
Yeah.
They're coming up with crazy ideas because there are no sane ideas left. I mean, I think
That's
that's
precisely what it is.
and again, I'm sorry to anybody, any of my Zionist listeners who are listening. I don't say this to be hurtful or anti-Semitic. I'm just stating what I think are the facts on the ground. It could be I'm wrong. It could be you'll pull something out at the last minute. War is full of surprises. It ain't over till the armistice is signed and all that. But right
Yeah.
now, I see no way that this can continue. I see no way that the Israelis are capable of pacifying Gaza. I see no way the Israelis are capable of taking and holding Rafah. I see absolutely no way of Israel eradicating Hamas around the world. And those were the terms that Israel gave as what they would consider, that was their version, unconditional surrender, and we want this. They're not getting that.
Yeah, that was their victory condition. Their victory condition was we're going to go in there, rescue the hostages, number one. Number two, we are going to destroy the Palestinian resistance, whether it's Hamas, Palestine Islamic Jihad, all these other guys. And number three, we're going to demilitarize Gaza. So we're going to make sure that these guys are not armed and they can't do like an October 7th ever again, right? I mean, that's a very, very big wish list. And when Netanyahu announced that stuff, like at the very beginning of the war, I'm like, they're never going to be able to do this, right? Because in order to do all of those three, it all involves doing the exact same thing, which is you have to get inside the tunnel networks. And the tunnel networks are very, very deep. And in order to get there, right, you can use some of the bigger American weapons like the JDAM bombs and these other things to blow up the shallower tunnels. But like anything that's 200 feet or below, you have to go in there one by one. And every time you go in there, you're going to have like 1-to-1 ratio casualties or greater. So I knew from the very beginning this was never going to work out because I knew what involved literally achieving those military goals step by step, right? So no, they've not really achieved anything. I mean, they say that, oh, we rescued one hostage here, two hostages there, but really that's just dumb luck for the most part. What
Most
else?
of the hostages are now dead. There's like they were
Most of
saying that they couldn't, like, basically one of the conditions was, can you release 40 for the like first time? And there may not be 40 left.
exactly, right? Most of them are dead because of starvation and because of like actual Israeli bombing and so on and so forth. So no, it's a complete basket case, good sir. Honestly, I think the Israelis have realized that this is the end of the line for them. And I think the reason Netanyahu continues the war is because he realizes that as soon as he says that, hey guys, we cannot invade Rafah, and oh by the way, we can't really do much against Hezbollah up north. You guys, you settlers, you're on your own. Hey guys, you guys in the West Bank, you guys are on your own as well. If he does that, he goes to jail. So I think he's just going along with the motions now. So that's the situation. And unless there's like a big civil war in the country, which like kicks him off power forcibly, he's gonna keep doing the motions, I think.
I mean, there is, yeah, he's in a situation where he has to keep the war going to keep his coalition open. So he, like, as you said, it may well be a case at this point of not just I lose the prime ministership, I go to prison. So he has every incentive to stay in office, you know, even if that doesn't, even if that means an ongoing war. But I think he's coming. He realizes ultimately, as you said, he may well just be negotiating for, okay, you know, I want a piece of, you know, I want a mansion in like X area with no extradition treaties, and I want a flight there. You know, that's that.
Send me to
I mean,
New Zealand. Yeah, send me to New Zealand. That's the situation now. That's
yeah, it's
hilarious.
more like just get me out of this, you know, get me out of here. It's over, you know, but it's over. I mean, I think that is the really the big thing with the Israeli conflict. It was over before it started. You know, every day it just becomes, okay, what the, I mean, the terms of winning for the Palestinians are to survive and leave the borders where they are. And they ain't moving the borders. They're not like the borders are staying where they are. If anything, Israel is losing territory in the north. A lot of those northern settlers aren't going back there.
Yeah, precisely. Precisely. Yeah. No, I mean, Hezbollah's Nasrallah, he put it best. He's like, look, we've already displaced like well over 200,000 of you guys. And if you keep escalating with us, we're going to keep on hitting the Galilee. Like, this is the thing, right? And I think I mentioned this in our Telegram conversations, but they don't have to annex anything. All they have to do is they have to increase the tempo of attacks. They have to hit the military facilities. They have to hit the civilian infrastructure. They got to keep doing that. And it's basically a slow boil the frog type scenario. So if you're a settler living there up with your family, you're going to be like, okay, well, Nasrallah is going to kill me one of these days. Let me not live here. Let me move down south to Tel Aviv or these other places and seek asylum there, right? Because I don't want to be near these rockets or missiles or what have you, right? And any one of these days, I'm going to be killed. So that's what they're ho hoping for. And so far, it's been an astounding success, rather. Like I said, 250,000 displaced, and yeah, everyone's now in the capital. They're all protesting every night. They are, getting more and more, shall we say, rambunctious. And the Israelis have no idea what to do. They're kind of telling them that they're re reassuring them that, look, we got everything under control. Eventually, you'll go back home. Eventually, we'll fight against Lebanon. We'll kick them off, and nobody believes them. right? Nobody actually believes them, right? They're kind of like, they're like a hopium and copium sort of thing in that, yes, we're gonna win. We're gonna win all the battles, yada,
Yeah,
yada, yada. But nobody actually believes them.
we're going to send troops into Lebanon, and we're pulling out of Gaza and the West Bank to do that because, of course, the West Bank and Gaza aren't going to get heated up, and we aren't going to start having shooting incidents if we go into Lebanon against Hezbollah. I mean, it's just like, okay, you're the size of New Jersey, people. I live in New Jersey. It's like it's a small state. You don't have the resources to fight a multi-front war. I mean, certainly don't have the resources to extend into another state while you're fighting a hot war in your own territory. I mean, again, it's just like talking to like serious people. It's like this is not a serious conversation. You're talking about stuff that's essentially like telling, it's like the Game of Thrones defense. Well, we're gonna have Dany Targaryen fly over and like burn them with her dragon. Like, do you think that's ethical? I think no, I think it's stupid. There is no, what you're doing, you don't have a dragon, you also don't have the troops to go into Lebanon. So it's like when you're talking about that, when you're making noises about that, when you're presenting it as a live strategy, you're trying to deflect from something and you're wasting everybody's time.
No, I mean, I think the Israelis have been drunk on their success for so long that they forgot what it is that made them successful to begin with, right? 1967, right? 1967 was a success because, 1967 was a success because the Israelis had American weaponry. They had American funding and backing and so on and so forth. And the Arab armies they were up against were extremely incompetent, right? So that's the first thing. 1973, meanwhile, people say it was an Israeli victory. I disagree because I think what happened there was they had a lot of tactical victories, but strategically they were forced to give up the Sinai, right? And so even though the Egyptians were very, very incompetent and so on and so forth, the Israelis basically, after that war, that was like their apex, right? 1967 was their apex. 1973 was a disaster because they lost the Sinai, so they lost that buffer against Egypt. And then after that, it's been a downward spiral for them. So no, you're correct, good sir. I mean, they're the size of New Jersey, but they don't act like it. That's the problem, right? If Israel acted like they're the size of New Jersey, we would not be in this problem, right? They act like they're an empire. That's the problem.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, it's just, and we're going to wind up going to war over this like patch of land the size of New Jersey that, again, I'm happy so long as you save the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, so long as, yes, there are Christian holy sites there. And yeah, I'd like to see them preserved. I'd like to see the Islamic holy sites. I'd like to see the Jewish holy sites preserved. But strategically, that let, you know. There is nothing in the state of Israel that is worth hundreds of thousands of Americans dying for. And if we get into a war, into World War III, hundreds of thousands is a very charitable, guess.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. No, I mean, we're now in this situation where I think the Israelis know in their subconscious what it is they're dealing with, like I was saying, right? But they don't want to admit it because as soon as they admit it, the game is up, basically. And they're gonna keep doing the motions. Netanyahu is gonna keep doing his thing until the country descends into complete anarchy, right? And at that point, Hezbollah knows what to do, right? Like I said, they don't have to invade. They simply have to use Ridwan, which is the special forces of Hezbollah, just like about 5,000 strong. They've got like 50,000 regulars, and they've got. So Ridwan is 5,000, then Hezbollah has another 50,000 regular fighters, and then they have over 100,000 reserves. So what they're going to do is they're going to do like guerrilla style raids, right? It's going to be like October 7th, but it's going to be like multiple October 7th type attacks across the border, right? So they'll do that, they'll foster some anarchy, and at that point, the Israelis are forced to negotiate, right? Or they can escalate, in which case there's going to be even more hurt and more pain, right? But yeah, I mean, that's sort of the deterministic outcome I'm seeing up ahead in the future.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's the Israelis need to understand this, and the Americans are even worse. America's diplomatic troops still seem to think that, this is where the sole superpower. They basically, it's like they really honestly think that it's, you're negotiating as if, we're the Roman Empire under the Caesars. We're basically the Roman Empire with Odoacer waiting outside the gates.
Are you okay, good sir?
Just a little, I have a bit of a cough, but
Okay.
no, I'm
Yeah,
really,
no.
yeah.
Yeah,
And
go ahead, go ahead, go ahead.
it astounds me that America has fallen this far, in my lifetime, the 58 years I've lived. I mean, I rem literacy has fallen, happiness has fallen, birth rates have fallen, intelligence has just fallen precipitously. I mean, back in the day, Henry Kissinger, okay, he was an evil SOB, may he rot in hell, but he was a smart evil SOB.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
mean, if I must be ruled by an evil SOB, I'd at least like them to be smart.
Very true. I honestly don't know what to make of it. I think the Americans are still bluffing. I don't think there's going to be if they actually intercepted those missiles that are coming in towards the goal line, that would be World War III. I don't think they're going to do it. Because again, they don't have the weapons. I don't, it's an open question if the missile system even works, right? Like the Minuteman III, right, which is the American nuclear arsenal, right? They were supposed to get upgraded in the 1990s, but that never ended up happening. And now every few years or so, they're like, okay, we're gonna get to it, we're gonna get to it. And now I think the next date is like 2030, and it's still not been done. So and every time they try and test one of these things, it always fails. So people are like, oh, well, America has 5,500 nukes. My answer to that, my reply to that is, do they really? Like, do they really? Because that's an open question. Is it 5,500 nukes, or is it 5,500 expired product, which is kind of similar to the expired milk in your refrigerator? Like, I think America's nuclear arsenal is toast, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I
If
think
you've not
it's,
up.
yeah. If you
Go ahead.
haven't, if you've left that stuff un basically checked for 50 years, I mean, it's even using the computer systems of the 70s, yes, that's toast. I mean, the best thing you could do is disassemble those missiles and maybe use the fissile material to make another bomb, but I mean, I'm saying that as an uninformed speculation. I have no idea of how easy it is to remove the trigger from a bomb without it going off. But I mean, it's yeah, we have those silos out there full of weapons that at this point almost certainly can't fire. I mean, yeah, we've got like
Precisely.
basically we know we'd be fighting from submarines, but it's even there, nobody really wants global thermonuclear war. And where are we going to use it? It's again, nuclear weapons are there to discourage people from invading your territory. That's the only thing they really appear to be good for.
And nobody wants the war, right? But you've got like the collective Biden doing things like, okay, ironclad, yada yada yada. I'm like, bro, your nuclear arsenal does not work. Your nuclear arsenal is like expired milk in the refrigerator, right? Like, why are you talking like this? Don't talk like this,
I
right?
would make a
You're gonna get
very
people
good
killed.
guess that the Russians have kept their nukes up where we haven't. I'm just, that's a guess.
I
But
mean, they test it every few years or so, and they seem to be working fine, so.
yeah, I mean, I'm just, we don't do that, because of course we didn't have to because we're America and we got the greatest technology ever and it'll last forever, except that it didn't. But yeah, I mean, I think that we have basically our empire. This one, not even within my lifetime, but within the past 20 years, I've just seen the American Empire crumbling precipitously. If you look at it, we've kind of been in a holding action since 2000. Since 2001, we've been in a holding action as we watch the multipolar world, come out of the ashes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to make of this American bluff. I think it's a big fat bluff. I think they cannot fight, even if they wanted to. Like, even if the neocons and the all these other idiots in the administration, even if they wanted to fight, they are not able to, because they don't have the weaponry or whatnot, or the manpower and what have you. I don't know what to make of it, honestly. I think it's a big fat bluff. That being said, I think it's a very dangerous bluff, and it is a world war type it's a world war type danger that we're in right now.
I mean, I think we
One
are
other
crazy
option.
enough to sail a fleet into range of like Iranian missiles just to make a statement. I don't think we're crazy enough to actually start firing missiles from that fleet. However, the simple act of bringing that fleet in may put you in a situation where you're fired upon and you wind up firing those missiles. I mean, yeah, it's a stupid provocation. It's a stupid provocation that could easily end with a lot of sailors at the bottom of the Mediterranean.
And at that point, the Americans have to decide. They're like, okay, well, our aircraft carrier battle group is lost. We've lost tens of thousands of airmen, soldiers, marines, and sailors, right? Do we now escalate and do we launch nukes at Iran, right? Because that's the only other option they've got left. It's not like, oh, I've lost one aircraft carrier battle group. I can now use the bases I have in West Asia. Well, no, you don't. You won't be able to do so because no one will allow you access. And even if you try to use those bases, the Iranians will fire off all their other missiles, which are conventional in nature, and you'll get blown off the face of the earth, right? So the only thing you've got left as an American is to use your nukes, right? But you would be using them in an offensive capacity. And what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is you have a conventional series of strikes by the Iranians against all your installations and your ships and your carrier battle groups. But in response, you're using a nuclear weapon, right? So people would view it as an escalatory step on your behalf, right? They would view you as being the first user of nukes, right? In which case, you now become the global pariah, right? Not Iran. Iran would not be viewed as a global pariah. Iran would be viewed as they're just defending their waters and their territory, right? So are the Americans willing to go that far? I think not. I think one of the things about being an evil SOB is that even the smart evil SOBs are cowards deep in their hearts. Deep in their hearts, they're cowards. And I do not think they have the courage necessary to press that big red button, knowing what the implications will be. Because cowards want to live ultimately, right? Cowards want to live. And, you know, for them, for cowards, the idea of doing so is suicide, right? They don't have an idea of martyrdom, right? The courageous people have an idea of martyrdom. And cowardly people, they view everything in through the lens of suicide. They're like, okay, well, this is just suicide. And a courageous person will be like, oh no, this is martyrdom, right? So they don't have that frame of mind, right? They don't have that belief system. They don't have that frame of mind. So I think they're not going to do it. Now, like you were saying, good sir, if they're stupid enough to sail up right up the streets of Hormuz, the Iranians will just like shoot them down basically. So at that point, I mean, what? America is basically dead. Everyone's like, oh, look, the American ships, they don't mean anything, right? Oh, just do whatever you want. And China's gonna be like, all right, Taiwan, you want to join up with us? Did you see that? The Americans can't defend you. And then at that point, Taiwan becomes part of China and so on and so forth, right? So
Yeah, it's I don't. Yeah, this is what we need to do. The smart thing to do, which is rarely the thing governments choose to do, would be, which Trump was starting to do, slowly unwinding the American empire. Like, okay, we got bases here. We don't need those bases here. What we owe, we don't need these bases surrounding this country. We need to make nice with this country and get in like good terms with them so we don't have to surround them with missiles to make sure they do what we tell them. Just understand, and we have to do this because we no longer can keep it up. This is what adults do. I like, I want to do this, but I don't have the budget for it, therefore I don't buy it. It's just we unwind, but Trump was starting to do this. We could do this and go back to, again, being a large, prosperous country with a lot of natural resources and arable water, who's on good terms with everybody else in the world because we don't interfere in their work. We could be big Switzerland or even big Canada.
Big. I mean, Canada kind of interferes because of the Americans, so I guess big Switzerland is a better way. I mean, big Switzerland. I mean, the Empire of Lies is so bad that Switzerland has lost its neutrality, and Canada is a part of NATO. So okay, but I guess what I understand what you're trying to say. Honestly, there is still an opportunity to do all that. The problem is that it's a far more narrow road. whether it's helping out Ukraine, helping out Israel. The problem with America is that America has its hands in multiple cookie jars all across the world, right? And at this moment in time, it doesn't seem like it's going to take those hands out of those cookie jars until it suffers catastrophic defeat, right? And, you know, whether it's the Chinese or the Russians or the Iranians, they basically realize that, okay, the only way America is going to stop doing what it's doing is if we inflict a severe strategic defeat on America, right? It's not going to become a normal country with the rest of the world unless that happens, right? It's going to continue pursuing hegemony and empire until we inflict a defeat on them, right? And because now that's kind of the general frame with which the leadership of these countries view America, this is why we're very, very close to World War, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're going, yeah, we are definitely heading towards war because we can't stop it. We have to understand that, like, you know, as you had said before, we have those troops there as tripwires. Nobody messes with the troops at our bases because nobody wants to have a shock and awe coming in their backyard. When people realize there ain't no shock and awe coming in their backyard, those bases are toast. You know,
Yeah,
we're
exactly.
basically, those people are going to be sacrificial lambs. Get the sacrificial lambs out of the area. You know, at the very least, it cools down tempers against us. Yeah, maybe there's still going to be chaos there. Maybe there's still going to be a whole bunch of sects squabbling. You know, we'll just quit paying our sects.
No, that's the best course of action, honestly. But anyone who does that, that's political suicide. Because the right wing of America will say that, look, this is American retreat. Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know, this American leadership is destroyed because of you. And the left wing will say that, look, you know, all these all these things that you're doing, it's making America less safe because terrorism will come back, ISIS will come back, all this other nonsense, right? So it's a political loser, but eventually someone has to do it. And if that someone does not do it, right, what happens then? What happens is, well, these guys, like you were saying, good sir, they're going to become sacrificial lambs, right? And when I say sacrificial lambs and when you say sacrificial lambs, we're not talking about, oh, a few dozen of them got killed. No, we're talking about the entire battalion, the entire brigade, everyone dying. Like, literally, the missiles come in and you have tens of thousands dying. Like, if that's what people think is a price worth willing to pay, I think honestly they've got their priorities backwards. I think they should be doing whatever they can to save those young men's lives, and you know all this other stuff about empire and tripwire forces, this is all nonsense. It's all rubbish, right?
And
So.
once those tripwires are launched, America is going to be screaming for blood. They're going to be screaming, we need to go to war with those Iranians. You know, and a war with the Iranians is a war we can't win that war. Nobody wins that war. The price of oil spikes to the point where we have to pull away from that war to keep the industrial world from collapsing. That's what happens, you know, and then we wind up making peace with Iran, and Iran becomes the de facto and, you know, official de jure big power in the region.
I mean, Iran would have volunteers from all over the Islamic world show up, whether it's Shia, Sunni, all these guys, they'll all show up to help Iran. It'll have an un what you call it? It will have a unrestricted manpower pool. The Americans will have a lot of people yelling for blood in the streets, but very few people will be willing to actually go there and fight. Iran will not have that problem. With regard to like weaponry, Russia and China will provide Iran with weapons. The Iranians will obviously blockade the streets of Hormuz. So it's an unwinnable war for the Americans, basically. They're basically screwed. And which is why I think there has to be some degree of realism that prevails, because everything else, like we just spoke about, if all these other things happen, this is basically the end of America as we know it, right? And what was the name of that movie by Alex Garland, Civil War, which came out like 2 or 3 days ago? Like, people think that's fiction. That's not fiction, folks. That's like what's going to happen if war with Iran breaks out. You're going to have $400 oil, and you're going to have like the balkanization of America. So if that's what you want, all right, go right ahead, I guess.
I mean, I expect balkanization of America to happen slowly. My guess would be what we see is, you know, every year, you know, a lot of the American territory that used to be Mexico is big, taken over, is like now, once again, majority Hispanophone, majority Spanish people and Mexicans. They will gradually take over the area in time. The area is going to be war like largely run by cartels, which are what we call our warlords today. And America will still pretend they hold it, but they won't really have any control over it. I mean, that's what I'm kind of expecting the American decline looks like. Basically, we run the American government runs out of money. They try the whole process of we're going to rule with an iron fist for a little bit. Then they just discover they have neither the resources, the cash, nor the troops to do it. And America continues to sl like a slow decline. And it will naturally be several different regions because we are, the northern U.S. and the southern U.S., for example, northeast and southeastern United States are two separate cultures. They're as different. More different than, say, an American and a Canadian.
I mean, it's already the case that a lot of these bigger cities, the gangs and the cartels, they de facto run the place. I mean, the police have like this idea. The police, if you talk to them, they'll tell you that, okay, well, we pretend that we do law and order and these other things, but technically speaking, all the social services, all the backdoor dealings, all the nonprofits, they're all run by people who are directly or indirectly run by the cartels, right? They have the money. They run the show, so to speak. And like honestly, in a worst case scenario, let's say there's like a full-on invasion of Chicago. Like Chicago police, there's not enough Chicago police to stop the takeover, right? The cartels would be better armed, they would be better funded. Like what? The Chicago police have a few helicopters. I mean, that's not good enough. You've got like anti-air systems. Like they have anti-air systems, they have RPGs, they have heavy weapons, basically. They have heavy weapons, so we've already passed that point. The only reason why the cartels don't do a full-on takeover is because they don't want to fight the federal government one-on-one, right? The federal government is also on the verge of collapse. And when that collapse happens, you're going to see the warlords, as you were saying, good sir, go for the kill, basically. So.
Yeah, I mean, the cartels don't want a war with us, and we don't want a war with them. They want business as usual, and they have organizations set up that are pretty sophisticated organizations for running business as usual. I mean, that's, it's not, not justifying the bloodshed. Yeah, there's a lot of brutality and bloodshed there, but there's also an awful lot of efficiency, and they do kind of run together. They can. The Assyrians were really brutal, but they were also great administrators.
Pretty much. Yeah, no, we are kind of headed towards the crazy times, good sir.
Yeah,
Let's see what
crazy times,
happens.
I think, is it. Yeah, probably should like this, but I think we ran a little long this time, but there's so much to talk about this week.
Yeah, I mean, if war breaks out, we might have to do an emergency episode. But I think
Yeah.
maybe we can call this quits for today.
Yeah, I think this is, yeah. I think we are all going to sign off here, people. You may be hearing from us in a few days with, like, as Anoff says, an emergency episode because things are getting heating up. The doom cometh. And until next time, thanks for tuning in.
Thank you, good sir.
Take care. Bye.